The tools and the materials change over time, but lots of us like to tinker, fix things that stop working around the house, or take the working parts from several small kitchen appliances to create something new. Tinkering is a big deal these days, even outside science museums, and it's acquiring a whole new glossary of terms like maker culture and maker space. Here's our chance to get a better idea of what those terms mean. We welcome three guests who are intimately acquainted with a makerspace in the Rogue Valley called the Rogue Hack Lab. We have Micah Cardillo, one of the board members in here in the studio with me. Micah, welcome to The Exchange.
Hi.
Good to have you here. Kevin Connor is another local maker and a Hack Lab board member. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks for having us.
And on the phone we have Randolph Jones, who's an assistant professor, an adjunct professor at Southern Oregon University. Randolph, welcome to you.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
So let's get some general stuff out of the way first. What is a makerspace? And everybody's looking at Micah
who,
now.
Who wants to take that?
Yeah,
okay,
I'll take it.
A makerspace, and I put the two together, hackerspaces and makerspaces, all have all come from sort of different histories, but they all share a lot of commonality, and it's very difficult to, as they evolve and grow, each one is unique. There's thousands across the planet now. As they grow, they each form their own culture, unique culture, but there is some commonality, and the commonality is that it's about coming together and tinkering together, basically. So it's the collaboration aspect. It's access to tools that you couldn't afford to have yourself, possibly. But more importantly, it's about being able to run into people you would not normally run into and start. You know, a lot of times we all have side projects that we've worked on that sometimes you just run into a difficult spot and you don't know how to get past that. And when you start being in the same place with a lot of people who have different skills, you can overcome those bumps and hurdles and do some more challenging aspects of your project. And so it's a great way to basically there's a social aspect to it as well.
Yeah. And Kevin Connor is makerspaces are also called hackerspaces. I mean, this is the Rogue Hack Lab we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, the real defining difference between a makerspace and a hackerspace, I would say, is focus, where a makerspace is going to have a lot more shop equipment and floor space, you know, a wood shop and a metal shop and welding equipment type of stuff. A hackerspace is focused more on code and computer programming and robotics and, you know, things you could do upstairs.
And so is Rogue Hack Lab attempting to be both, really?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a crossover, and I think the cross-pollination is what a lot of our members are looking for. There's a lot of integration between the two. A lot of the hardware stuff now involves programming, and Kevin, who's doing a lot of this hands-on machine stuff, is learning some programming stuff, and so there, you know, software kind of touches everything nowadays, and I think it's not just that too. It's also the creative aspect. It's the art and design. All of that stuff ends up connecting to each other.
And Randolph Jones, you're in the Emerging Media and Digital Arts Center, the EMDA Center at Southern Oregon University, aren't you?
That's correct.
And so is that itself a makerspace, or how does that connect to makerspaces around the region?
Well, I think the thing that I find so attractive about us, we're a community partner with the Rogue Hack Lab, and the thing that I find that is so attractive about being a community partner with the Rogue Hack Lab is the aspect of adaptive learning. So a lot of the guys at the Rogue Hack Lab, they've learned things adaptively. So they go through and they find ways to adapt their knowledge to new things that they're picking up as they're tinkering and as they're hacking. And the thing that I think is really interesting that I want to expose my students to, especially in digital media, is that you're not going to, when you get out in the real world 10 years from now, you're not going to be doing the same thing that you learned in school. So students are going to have to actually learn to be good learners. They're going to have to learn to be adaptive learners. So the Emerging Media and Digital Arts Department we're not a hacker or makerspace per se, but by aligning ourselves with somebody like the Rogue Hack Lab, we can expose students to that adaptive learning approach that I think is really important to the future of digital media and having a digital media career.
Kevin Connor, you were saying just before we got started, the Rogue Hack Lab started around October of 2012, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Micah may have a better...
Well, it kind of started in our living rooms. It was five people that committed to doing this. It started out of a group that was meeting down in Four Daughters in Medford called SOGI, Southern Oregon Geek Group. And so that's sort of a nice monthly meeting, dinner meeting, where you can go and talk geek. And normally, you're talking geek, and people are looking at you strange, and they're not your people, and they don't really get you. So this is a great place, a great starting point. And out of that group, some of us, not a whole lot, but some of us really wanted to start working together. And in that environment, it's very social, but there's no dry erase board, there's no tables and project space. We can't bring in our equipment, we can't get dirty, we can't do our show and tell stuff. So out of that, we kind of said, hey, we know about hacker spaces, we've been to them, we're going to go visit some more of them. We have a little bit of knowledge of the history of what they're becoming, more commonplace. And we said, why can't we have that in the Rogue Valley? Why can't we do it? So we started.
We're talking about hackerspaces and makerspaces with some of the people involved with the Rogue Hack Lab. Is it in Medford?
It is in downtown Medford, right near the Criterion, or what is now, what's the new name?
It's the Criterion Theater at the James Morrison Collier Performing Arts Center or something like that.
Yeah, so we started talking about it in February of 2012, and it took us that long until October to really, open up the doors to the public, find a space and open up the doors to the public. It was a nice long process of trying to figure out what were we about, how do we do this? All of us that got involved in the beginning all had little kids, very busy lives, not a lot of spare time, but we really wanted to do this, so we went for it.
You can join this discussion with Micah Cardillo, Kevin Connor, and Randolph Jones, all involved with the Rogue Hack Lab. And we'll talk about hack labs, hack spaces, maker spaces. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Kevin Connor, what goes on at the Rogue Hack Lab? I mean, if people just sort of glanced in the window, what sorts of things would they see?
You'd see a lot of adaptations of older technology being reinvigorated and have new life pumped into it through...
Not Commodore VIC-20s or something, right?
Oh, I wish. Yeah. If someone has a spare Amiga laying around, go ahead and bring that down. But yeah, for instance, we have a Translux, a marquee scroll board in the window that who knows what software and firmware it used to require. We just gutted all that, and a couple of our members got together and put in a Raspberry Pi. No, actually, it's on an Arduino, which is an open source microcontroller system that has a integrated development environment. Makes it real easy to do programming for physical stuff. So they put one of those in there and then attach that to a Raspberry Pi, which is on a network, and it's actually tied into our calendar system. So anytime we have an updated event that's going on, it'll always show what's most recently happening. We're hoping to adapt that for Tinkerfest to look directly at Twitter for specific hashtags, and you could stand right in front of the board and tweet something with the right hashtag, and you'll see it right up
within
there
seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
what is Tinkerfest?
Tinkerfest is, it's kind of similar to Maker Faire, which is a growing popular exhibition that's happening around the world. It's hosted by ScienceWorks here in Ashland. Yeah. It's focused on showing children and everyone.
It's just, what it is, I think, is it's about coming in at a low bar in a very hands-on way, very applied way. So anything that's going on, it's not like just putting up an exhibit or a table. Each station is intentionally thought of as a way to start the tinkering process. So you start at a very low entry point where it doesn't acquire a lot of previous knowledge or skill, and you can go as far as you want, as high as you want. You can keep going with that thing that you started there, and you can keep building on it and keep making that thing, whatever it is that you're working on, more interesting or more creative. So it's a blend of art and electronics and technology and other old-fashioned, blacksmithing and leatherwork and all sorts of creative, interesting things. And what's really great about it is the energy that's there when everybody in that creative community is kind of together mentoring these folks who are just coming in from the community. And I think everyone has a great time. It's sort of an extraordinary weekend when you're there.
Randolph Jones at Southern Oregon University, do you encourage students to go to places like the Hack Lab?
Yeah, I do, and since the Road Hack Lab is so new, a lot of people may not know that they exist yet. So I'm always encouraging my students to go through a practical project that we put together. I had the students in the winter work with the Road Hack Lab to promote the Tinkerfest event, promote their presence at the Tinkerfest event. So the students created some videos. They had to interview some of the Hack Lab members and get to know them a little better and get to know some of the projects that they're working on. And it's baby steps, but through that simple exposure to the Hack Lab members, I'm hoping that they start developing an interest and maybe taking on some of those adaptive learning approaches that we see at the Hack Lab.
So, I mean, given that creativity comes in bursts and not necessarily on very predictable schedules, I mean, how do you schedule the hours at the Rogue Hack Lab? I mean, when is it open? When is it not? Is it always available? Do lots of people have keys? I mean, how does this all work?
So here we get into an interesting aspect of a Hack Lab or makerspace. Many of them are completely open. So you get a membership at Rogue Hack Lab, you get a key. It's your building. That's part of the amazing part about it. Is that you come and go as you please, and there are certain times that are scheduled where everyone is encouraged to come together for a specific purpose. On Thursdays, every other Thursday, we have 3D Thursday, where we talk about CNC and 3D printing and how to draw stuff up in CAD, etc. So,
yeah, and every Wednesday, you know, from the very beginning, we wanted to have a designated time that the public could feel comfortable coming in and not feel like, oh, we don't know who's going to be there, when they're going to be there. So from the very beginning, we've had open hack nights, what we call them open hack nights, and right now they're on Wednesday from 6:30 till very late, and those are times we've committed to having members who have keys there, so there's always going to be somebody in there. But as these spaces get more established, you'll find that there's always somebody there 24 hours after a while. And so you just show up and, you know, knock on the door, and so to speak, or ring the doorbell, or just let them know you're coming in advance. And usually, you know, you can find a time that works for you to come in. And it's really important, a part of the ethos that we wanted to establish is that this is open to everybody. You don't have to pay a fee when you walk in the door. It's just like the libraries. This is not a government-funded thing. It's all self-funded by the members. But we want it to be a public resource so that anyone who has an interest or an idea and they want to go talk to people who know about these subjects, technology, programming, et cetera, this is a safe and a good place to come and get connected with people.
Where does the stuff come from? Where do you get the tools? Where do you get the materials? I mean, are people just, bringing in LEDs that they happen to have around the garage, stuff like that?
Yeah, it's all community contributed. We basically pay the bills with member dues, and the rest is all just people who are passionate about getting this stuff out there and available, and so they donate stuff. It would be awesome to have more stuff. We're kind of in a limited space right now. We started out small, and there's so many projects that we'd love to do that would require like a bigger, more messier space. We could get messier in. We have a nice space right now, but it's got wood floors that are historic, and we're not allowed to really scratch them. So
landlord would take a dim view of that. Yes.
So he's been great so far, but I think in our future we're definitely looking for a way to accommodate the wide diversity of interests that we have in our community.
So do people come in with set projects in mind, or do they just come in with like, I have an idea that may work out or may not, and it turns into something else because there's other people next to them helping feed the creative stream, as it were?
Both definitely happen, and the Hack Lab's a great place to do that, and makerspaces in general, because I made a 3D printer, for instance, and I had no idea.
You made a 3D printer?
I made one, yes. There are recipes out there, mm-hmm. so to speak, but I followed one. But anyway, getting into that, it really showed me how much different technologies are integrated, because I had to learn software. I had to build the machine. I had to learn the, plastic thermodynamics and how things are going to expand and shrink. Robotics, firmware and programming, microcontrollers, all that stuff. I couldn't make a 3D printer without doing all of that.
And then there's the CAD aspect, which is a whole other realm.
Computer assisted design. Yeah.
Design and how to make the objects in a way that they will print well, that the structural integrity will work out.
And, right. And if there were any aspect of that I didn't understand, or if someone else wanted to start a project and they didn't understand it, at the Hack Lab you have a group of members who histories and specialties and expertise in this variety of things. We have one guy who's an amazing electrical engineer, and we have a couple web programmers, and you know, a dude who's made a 3D printer at least once, you know, and all these different places, and we really love to just help each other accomplish
goals. I also
want to
say that, you know, we have a lot of families and kids too, and we have high schoolers and college students who find this to be a wonderful haven, a place to go. So it's a resource for you know, all ages. Because a lot of us have young children, we, you know, some hacker spaces out there you'll find are tend to be more adult oriented, but because of the nature of who is involved in the hack lab, we're very you know, open to kids and friendly to kids, and we really try to do activities that are accommodating to that.
Let's extend the discussion a few more minutes and invite the listeners to join us as well. We're talking about the Rogue Hack Lab and makerspaces more generally. Micah Cardillo and Kevin Connor in the studio with me are board members at the Rogue Hack Lab. Randolph Jones on the phone is an adjunct professor at Southern Oregon University in the Emerging Media and Digital Arts, EMDA. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what are your day jobs? I mean, I know what Randolph does, but what do you guys do during the day or during the night, whatever?
Yeah, I'm a software engineer now. I started out kind of, you know, I've done a lot of different things. I've done a lot of informal education. For a long time, I was doing, you know, I helped run an outdoor science school for a long time, and a lot of people in the community know me as the guy that ran the Mount Ashland ski program for a long time for the kids and the volunteers, and I got into software programming and working with software companies, and it's really fun. Now I'm on my own. I'm a kind of a freelancer and working on some really neat projects, building some platforms that are going to be really important in the future, I think. Yeah. And I'm really excited about it.
And Kevin, what do you do for a day job?
I do systems automation in the payroll department at Lithia Motors. So both of us write code.
Spend some time on keyboards. And then you want to do this in your off hours too, right?
Yeah. Like a lot of times when I'm outside of work stuff, I don't want to do that. You'll find this trend is that sometimes we want to do other things, and it isn't just about what we do at work. It's about these other interests that we have or want to pursue.
So what's the logical next step for a place like the Rogue Hack Lab? I mean, it sounds like with the realms of people you were talking about, the different cohorts that are coming in there, you might be running out of space fairly soon.
Yeah, so we're kind of in a strategic planning process, and I think we're just going to start talking a little bit more to the wider community about, you know, what do we want to see? Where do we fit within the greater framework? You know, it's hard to define what we are because we're so many different things depending on what you want the Hack Lab to be about. I think we're going to be working with and partnering with you know, ScienceWorks and other organizations that understand the importance of adaptive learning, informal learning, and sort of start that hands-on launching platform of getting involved, you know, just kind of, because we have a lot of structured educational opportunities, a lot of classrooms and desks, and there's a place for that, but I think there's also a place for a balance for informal learning environments, and I think we'll see more of that.
I wonder if this then pushes down into, for example, high schools where you get people who, you know, they don't know exactly what the end result is. They're not going to be doing like we did in shop class when we were kids. You know, here's the blueprint, go make the pencil box or whatever it was. Is this an educational model that is being adapted in some cases? And I guess that really should go to Randolph Jones.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you were asking if the educational model is something that we could participate in with the younger audience.
Mm-hmm, yeah. In other words, if this could be adapted by, you know, a tech school, a high school, whatever.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. I think the word serendipity is really hard to translate into other languages. So it has a really unique quality of, you know, getting your hands into something, and then sometimes you don't know the result that you're going to get. And I think that's something that we shouldn't frown upon. You know, if you don't get the results that you don't want, it's okay if you may end up discovering something that's even better. And that's something that we definitely need to encourage a lot more. And with younger students, we definitely need to encourage that. We need to get people thinking about ways that they frame success a little bit better in that respect.
Yeah, and I sure hope that we start doing more of this in formal education settings. So there's a balance between the sort of organized learning opportunities and sort of textbook approaches to, trying to determine an outcome. Amazing things happen when you don't put too much structure on where there doesn't need to be structure, and especially if you have a lot of intergenerational mentoring going on between people with different skills and different interests and different backgrounds too. I mean, it's just also a shared cultural experiences. I think we have a huge future in terms of shifting from a culture of consumption, which I think we've shifted towards consumption since the Industrial Revolution. And I think now, if everything's made overseas, I think that some of that will still continue, but I think it can kind of shift back the other way, where we start having some control in our lives over something in our lives. We don't have to do everything, but if we can just, whether it's cooking or gardening or making something, that thing can make us feel better about our lives, and also we'll learn more as we do it and invent new things as a result.
It's not all off the shelf. You actually can do some things yourself. Yeah. Sort of like back at the farm days, self-sufficiency
and problem solving. This is all about being able to problem solve and communicate with each other. That's what this is about.
Can people visit the Rogue Hack Lab just to come by for a tour or something?
Oh, anytime. Come in during Open Hack Night or check us up on meetup.com. You'll find Rogue Hack Lab, or go to roguehacklab.com. to connect with, and there's so many different ways to connect.
Excellent. Micah Cardillo, Kevin Connor, Randolph Jones, thank you all so much for talking about the Rogue Hack Lab today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Short break, and back with Garrison Keillor.